Hello, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan, and I'm here today with two people who need introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. To my left, he screw the rules. He has money. Nigel, how you doing, Nigel?
Doing great. Doing great.
And to quote a once great man, you do you, and I'll do me. And we won't do each other. Probably. Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing pretty good, Logan. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Well, we've had what, in my opinion, is probably been one of the most interesting weeks thus far in college football. Let's kick it right off with the most disappointing conference right now. The one that we're most invested in, the ACC. So it's proven once again that North Carolina is really the home, the heart of ACC country, and where all the strength derives from, clearly. So we've got two teams in UNC and Duke who are looking to take over the conference, especially on the coastal side. And then the only teams that could possibly challenge them are a team riding on Noah's Ark in South Carolina with Clemson, and Florida State, who has not looked particularly great. What is the outlook, and what has happened to all the other teams in this conference that has made it to play out like this? Andrew, I'll start with you.
I think a lot of what you're seeing is you're seeing parity. You're seeing teams that, you know, a Georgia Tech team that had a lot to replace. You're seeing a Virginia Tech team that lost a starting quarterback. A Pittsburgh team that lost player of the year James Conner and is still trying to find an identity on offense. You've got a Miami team you really don't know a lot about other than the almost loss to Nebraska and the loss to Cincinnati. So, yeah, it's a definitely a division that is still up for grabs. Duke and North Carolina both right now have the inside track. And when you look at it, Duke's only loss is to an undefeated Northwestern. North Carolina's got a pretty bad loss to a pretty bad South Carolina team, but it was a game that North Carolina controlled most of the game and just wasn't able to win it. Neither of those teams will catch Clemson or Florida State to finish out the conference season. So I think it definitely sets up well for Duke or North Carolina to keep running and keep hitting that inside track to win the Coastal.
Now, that said, this conference has shown us continually that things get very chaotic very quickly. Last year, Duke and UNC both ended up beating Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech still ended up winning the Coastal. I think, like you said, though, this year there's definitely more parity. There's teams that have a lot more to fight for and have a lot more strength in the conference than you would usually speak to. Nigel, what are your thoughts on the conference going forward? Who else can come out and has a puncher's shot at the title?
Looking honestly at the rest of the conference, you know, unfortunately, you know, I mean, just within the conference, I'm going to try to keep it strictly within the conference and not look at non-conference records. I would have to say, to me, it would probably be maybe Virginia. I don't think Virginia's a great team, but they had a really hard schedule. I think it's going to be really hard to kind of tell, you know, where they sit till they really get into the meat of their conference schedule. And then I would think Louisville. I think they played also a very hard schedule. They've been winning some games. They're kind of getting Lamar Jackson some more experience. You know, he's definitely going to get better as the season goes on, as all freshmen do. You know, outside of those kind of four teams that, you know, Andrew listed, being Clemson, Florida State, UNC, and Duke, I think those are going to be the two teams in their respective divisions that maybe will put up, add a little bit more chaos to the mix. I think, you know, teams that maybe have a little bit of say in that is Virginia Tech. If they get Michael Brewer back, I think they'll be able to dictate a little bit of who wins which division. I think Georgia Tech, you know, if they can get a little bit better and execute a little bit more and actually finish some games, I think they will be able to dictate, because they play both Clemson and Florida State here in the next couple of weeks, and maybe they decide who wins the division. I don't think it's just who do we think is the front runner right now, but who has the hardest schedule remaining. And I think, you know, maybe that's why, you know, Andrew's saying maybe a Duke makes it to the championship game again It's because Duke has a very easy schedule. They don't play Florida State. They don't play Clemson. I think that's going to put them really, really on the inside track. And that helps a Northwestern team look really good is if you have a team that's in that, you know, a conference championship game. So I'm definitely, you know, we will talk about Northwestern here in a little bit, but I think they're definitely rooting for that too.
All right, now focusing on the playoff situation coming out of the ACC, this was a conference that is a Power 5 conference despite how it looks right now. Saying that, there aren't a lot of teams that were looking to come out of this conference anymore. There were three or four at the beginning of the year, Georgia Tech, FSU, Clemson, and potentially a dark horse in – say Louisville or one of those other outside teams. Clearly all that has fallen apart. Right now, the only team that I think really matches up for the possibility would be Clemson. Mm-hmm. To quote the blog for ESPN on Florida State, they are currently the worst ranked team in the nation. So I'll ask both of you, and feel free to pick it up when you can. Should we be watching any other team than Clemson if you're just looking for a playoff candidate out of this conference?
I don't think so. I mean, we know what the perception is nationally of the ACC. Florida State has blown out two very, very weak teams and then barely beat two very decent teams. And Florida State will not be given the benefit of the doubt this year like they were last year. I don't think Duke does not carry the name recognition. UNC, as Andrew stated, has a very bad loss to a South Carolina team that is, you know, obviously dealing with some quarterback injuries, but also not very good. I think all of that, national perception, no real name recognition outside of Clemson, you know, just maybe the talent even, a little bit on the Duke and Clemson, the Duke and UNC side. I think Clemson is the only hope for the ACC to potentially get in the playoff game. And that means they can't trip up. If they trip up in conference, that's it. I think people are going to look at them as a one-loss team, and they're going to be behind Alabama. They're going to be behind an Ole Miss. I mean, pretty much any SEC team that has one loss, Clemson's going to be behind.
Andrew?
I think you hit on the biggest part of it. It's a thing a lot of people don't really want to talk about. Is the name recognition matters. The name on the front of the jersey is going to play a huge role in it. I think it happened last year. I think that if you have a Texas or an Oklahoma ranked that high as Big 12 champions as opposed to a Baylor or a TCU, I think you see a shakeup a little bit in the playoffs because that's what matters. Whether you want to admit it or not, that's a big deal. And because Clemson and Florida State are the big names or the huge names, now the team that I think – maybe not with a playoff shot, but if they end up undefeated, is with a one loss, would be a one loss Miami team. Especially okay. if that Cincinnati team ends up undefeated and wins the American.
True.
Because Miami has that name recognition that everyone wants. Would have had a win. They actually are at Florida State this weekend, so that'll be a big game to see what happens if all this is just me making stuff up.
To be fair, that
if Miami wins out, I think that they carry enough of a name recognition, probably still won't get a shot, but would have a better chance being talked about than a Duke or a North Carolina winning out.
And to be fair, if they did run the gauntlet, as it were, and win all their games from this point on, it's not like they're playing pathetic games. They've got some challenges on that schedule. Granted, a lot of them have dropped off because of the losses they've taken. They're no longer ranked as highly as they should be from our perspective, but definitely some big challenges in games going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, let's admit it. The problem with the ACC is still the same problem that's always been. The conference is schizophrenic. When you don't have teams consistently at the top where you can put a push pin on the board and say, this team's going to show up, they're going to get us good quality out of conference wins, and then they're going to be near the one or two spot in the conference. I think that's going to hurt you in terms of perception, because no offense, like you said, Duke. I'm glad that Duke is going doing well. I'm glad that UNC is doing well. But when you don't have those teams doing consistently well year in and year out, I think that's where people are like, I can't bank on this team because I don't know what they're going to do.
All right, moving to the bottom of the conference, on the other side of the coin, we've got four teams, most of which I don't think people were expecting to be at 2 and 3 in the position they are now. But the teams are Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Louisville, and Wake Forest, who are currently the worst teams in the ACC, unless I'm missing one. Those teams were clearly expected to do better, but at this point, we're looking at a Georgia Tech team that still has the toughest schedule in the country, and a Virginia Tech team and Louisville team who've definitely got some challenges ahead of them, and then a Wake Forest team that just wasn't expected to perform. At this point, which of these teams should we be looking to make their bowl game? Andrew, I'll start with you.
I could see Louisville doing it. Their only really big test left is at Florida State. I think they've got a shot against the remainder of their schedule, Boston College, Wake, Syracuse, Virginia, Pitt. The game against Kentucky will be tough because I think that Stoops finally has a pretty good program going on up in Lexington. But I think that'll give them – I mean, they win the next five out of the next seven. They're in a bowl game. It's not a good one, but they're there. Wake's just not there yet. I think Dave Clawson's putting together a good program. Wake still has to play North Carolina and Notre Dame and Clemson. So I don't see Wake being able to put it together. Georgia Tech's an interesting one. With Clemson and Florida State on the schedule, as well as the Georgia game at the end of the year, they've got a sweep Pitt, Virginia, Virginia Tech, and Miami, which unless the execution gets better on offense, you just don't see the Yellow Jackets doing it. And then Virginia Tech, they've got a chance too. I mean, they've got NC State, Miami, Duke, BC, Georgia Tech, Carolina, and Virginia. So it's probably Virginia Tech and Louisville would be my two biggest bets to turn the ship around in some way.
Right, and as you pointed out, the Virginia Tech-Georgia Tech matchup might end up being one of those where you end up knocking one of those teams out of a bowl game. Nigel, do you have any different perspectives on the matter?
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree. I mean, I feel like Georgia Tech and Wake Forest have the hardest schedule left, and you know they're only going to be on the outside looking in. They're going to have to beat the teams they should beat, and if they don't, then they aren't going to make it. If I had to say the most likely, I would have to go with Louisville. They're getting more polished. Their defense is there and has constantly been there. I think that's what will allow them to kind of be in the mix as the year kind of dwindles down towards the end. So I think Louisville will definitely be the most likely team to probably make the whole game.
Quite a switch from the beginning of the year with those two programs. Moving out back west, looking at the Pac-12, which had one of the biggest upsets that everyone probably missed because it happened so late. UCLA lost at home to Arizona State, which I think nobody had thought of Arizona State being a particularly great program since the beginning of the year when they took on Texas A&M. But we've been talking great things about UCLA. They've been looking like one of the most impressive teams out there up until last week. So clearly there's some difficulties going on there out west, and there's a lot left to play for all of those teams. Andrew, how does this UCLA loss affect the standings in the Pac-12 and that team moving forward?
Well, UCLA is going into an off week this week, so they'll definitely give them a chance to kind of lick their wounds, film up and see what went wrong. They've got a tough two-game stretch in at Stanford, and then at what might be the surprise team of the Pac-12, which is the Cal Bears, who are 5-0, 2-0 in the conference, and Sonny Dykes looks to have something running there with that Bear Raid offense and trying to do that. You know, UCLA after that goes Colorado, Oregon State, Washington State, which they shouldn't have any trouble any of those three games. To end the season at Utah and at USC is going to be a tough test, especially if Utah is able to keep winning like we've seen them do. They've got Cal this weekend that'll really be a big deciding game right there.
That's true. And Nigel, I want to talk about another team out west with you. Talk about an Oregon program that looked like it was pretty far out from doing anything after its two losses. We know they've been traditionally knocking on the door for the playoff. Now that this conference in the Pac-12 has been split wide open, the only team that's really dominant right now is Utah, and they're outside the division of Oregon. Can Oregon sweep the rest of the way and potentially win this conference? And if they do, would that put them in a playoff spot?
I don't think they can win the conference, so I mean that pretty much takes them out of the playoff discussion. I think I have to go with Stanford. Stanford, to me, is looking like the most complete team. Once again, another team that's only lost to Northwestern. But Stanford has looked completely different since that game. They have a running game again. Barry Sanders Jr., I think, is the kid who's there, who they've kind of gotten behind him and are running the ball really well. Kevin Hogan is back in offense where he's comfortable, which is taking what the defense gives him, handing off the ball when appropriate. You know, their power running game is back. Their defense is back. Where I was thinking at the beginning of the year, Brian Shaw is like, dude, what are you doing? The Stanford of old is not what it used to be. I think he's getting them back to what they are good at, their hallmarks, and I think Stanford is going to be the team to beat. Also put that with, Oregon hasn't been able to stop anybody on defense. We knew that, and you know, some of our non-local fans won't be able to, you know, understand what we're saying, but with Georgia State being able to put 23-plus points on you, that should be a cause for concern. I don't think if you can't stop Stanford and all they're going to do is shorten the game and run the ball down your throat, and like Andrew stated with Cal and their bear raid offense, if they're just going to be able to sling the rock all over the field, you're going to have a very hard time winning this division, let alone this conference.
So that would narrow it down essentially to Stanford and Cal, and you think Stanford can take that matchup against Cal with their defense?
I think with Stanford's offense, I will always go for the offense where it's a little bit more steady. If you can shorten the game, play good defense, and just run the ball down someone's throat, I think that puts a lot of cause for concern on Cal, who, yeah, Cal's undefeated, as Andrew said, but they've had some of the most unimpressive wins to me of the season. Their only convincing wins were against Grambling and against San Diego State. Texas, they beat by 1 point with the mixed extra point. They beat Washington by only 6 points, who lost pretty handily to Boise State. And they only beat Washington State, who got beat by FCS team by 6 points. So, yeah, Cal's undefeated, but we're going to find out who they are very quickly because they played number 5 Utah this week. And then they have an off week. And then after that, they have a game against UCLA. So, you know, Cal, while I completely agree they're a good team, I think we're going to find out who they are very quickly here in the next 3 games.
All right, then, and I'll go back to you, Andrew, for the first part of this question. So Utah is clearly the only undefeated team left, but they've still got a lot of challenges left on their schedule. And as Nigel spoke earlier, I think a lot of people are looking to the old guard of this conference to end up eventually winning it. So USC, Stanford, UCLA will be the ones on top, is basically the prediction. I think Oregon brought some new blood to the conference with the Nike budget and with all the interesting type of offense they ran. But should we expect to see USC, UCLA, and Stanford maintain dominance over the next few years with their programs? And if so, why would we expect that? The recruiting?
I think it's a lot easier for a traditional power to stay a traditional power. Now, I wouldn't necessarily put Stanford in that old guard, because before Jim Harbaugh, they weren't very good. Harbaugh came in and changed the culture, and David Shaw's kept that going. Yeah. So Stanford's as much a new kid on the block kind of as Oregon is.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, you can kind of say Oregon's a bit of an established team because they've been so consistent the past couple of years. I think that four of Oregon, Stanford, UCLA, and USC are the teams you're going to look for until another team steps up. You know, if Utah runs the table, obviously they're going to be there. But that's what you sit at. You look at teams that have been there and have shown you what they can do, and you wait for the new kid to step in and hit the old teams in the mouth if they can do it.
You know, And like you, and we know for a fact with the Pac-12 too, there's still a pretty strong basketball conference. You know, I think Rich Rod was saying it at Arizona, is that he's trying to change, you know, to just say we're not just waiting for basketball season to come. We actually want to have a football season and be successful with it. I think obviously one of their biggest outliers for this year was Scooby Wright not being able to play, and he's out again. So, you know, I think Arizona will underperform based on their personnel. But I think some of the new guard is coming in there. But then you're going to have teams like Cal. I think Cal's position this year and next year will be how their quarterback plays, right? You know, obviously he's being talked about as one of the top QBs potentially eligible for the draft. So we're going to see really quickly how some of these old guard teams, as you were saying, kind of stay put and kind of keep the status quo going.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the history for those programs, but it also has a lot to do with recruiting on the West Coast just seems to be a lot easier. Kids seem to want to go in the West Coast or stay in the West Coast. Anyway, we're going to go ahead, maybe a discussion for another day. We're going to go ahead and move back home to the Southeast. So let's go ahead and talk about Alabama versus Georgia, a game that I was a lot more worried about than apparently I should have been. Alabama just ran up and dominated Georgia between the hedges. Now, I think a lot of people will put that on improved coaching. A lot of people will put that on Georgia just not being prepared for the game. Personally, I view that as Saban and Lane Kiffin being on the same page, finally deciding on a QB that can run the offense and just letting him go to work. Now, Nigel, I'm seeing a reaction out of you. What do you think was the main cause for this win?
Obviously, they got the running game going early. We all know Lane Kiffin can get really fancy really quickly. He will get away from the running game for some odd reason. Even when he has a good offensive line, when he has a good back, Derrick Henry ran the ball 26 times for 148 yards, and that just shows not only that he was successful running the ball, but they fed him the rock constantly. Anytime you can get 20-plus carries out of a back, especially a bruising back like Derrick Henry, I think you're going to have nothing but success. They obviously started Jay Coker, who I felt was the better quarterback out of the two that they had kind of started over the first couple of games. And I think with that, when you establish that running game that opens up the play action pass, that makes them, you know, that makes everything else flow from that. That's why I love the running game so much in any offense. If you have that running game, you can dictate whatever action you need to. I think this is a classic case of Georgia was undefeated. People buried, as Nick Saban buried Alabama so prematurely. And I think this was Alabama's chance to kind of look themselves in the mirror and say, we're not as bad as everybody else is saying we are. We played a really good Ole Miss team and we got beat, but we can still dictate for the rest of the season what goes on. And they did. They went to between the hedges and they manhandled Georgia.
Well, I wouldn't get ahead of ourselves with that. There's still a lot of season left to be played, but I think you are right in that people might have been burying Alabama, just assuming because there was blood in the water, they were going to lose the rest of their games. Saban clearly had a mentality going into that game. I heard it plenty at home. He said repeatedly that a normal effort was not going to win that game. It would take an exceptional effort. But that's just his advice. Andrew, what did you think about that game?
I think it's a lot of the same thing. Alabama's always shown a resiliency. I mean, Nick Saban's one of the best coaches in the game. You know, I think that a lot of people got ahead of themselves. You know, it's that still old adage of you got to beat the king to be the king. And Alabama, to me, is still the king. They still showed that. They showed that they could go into a hostile environment, be the underdog, and whip a very talented Georgia team. I think the big thing, too, and I wish we could go back and talk about last week's podcast where I made the comment about Grayson Lambert's been playing checkers and Saban's going to come in and make him play chess. And I think we found out that Grayson Lambert's not a very good chess player.
This is true. This is very true. They haven't had to play any team that would really challenge him force him off of his position. I mean, he completed 10 of 24 passes for 86 yards. That speaks volumes to me of they're going to rush you, and you're going to make a decision, but they do what Alabama does, which is force everything underneath, and then they gang tackle. So that allowed him to complete as many passes as he thought was necessary, but they're like, everything's going to be for a 2 or 3 yard completion, and then we're going to, you know, make sure tackles, as we saw them do multiple times that night, and win the game.
Yeah, Nigel, I don't remember who I heard it from, but I think somebody told me that Georgia just has better QBs than Alabama, and Alabama went and proved it wrong. Oh, well, well, while we're on, we're gonna move on to a different East v. West matchup, one which turned out in an entirely different way. Ole Miss versus Florida. Now, Ole Miss had to go on the road to one of the most difficult places to play in the country, in the swamp down in Florida, but they just got stomped. I feel bad for those guys. Florida, I think, has surprised a lot of people coming out of the gate with Jim McElwain just dominating his early performances. I think the biggest struggle he had was against Tennessee in the swamp. But other than that, everything has looked good. That said, there are still a lot of teams that are in the chase. Kentucky, Georgia, Mizzou. But, Andrew, I'll go ahead and throw it over to you. Is Florida going to run away with this conference? It seems like we have this discussion every year, every week about the East and who's going to end up finally taking it. Is this Florida's shot?
I think the Georgia-Florida game on Halloween is going to play a really big role. I think the other side of it, too, is that Florida has to go to LSU on the 17th. I think that being Florida's remaining West opponent is going to play a huge role, because Georgia's West opponent is Auburn, and Auburn has looked like absolute hot garbage recently. So I think that game at LSU and then the Georgia-Florida game 2 weeks after that will kind of be the deciding factor. Because either team shouldn't stumble aside from those two games. Both teams should be the favorites going out, outside of Florida LSU.
Until, of course, Mizzou beats one of them for no particular reason other than they just...
Hashtag free Matty Mock.
Nigel, do you have any thoughts about the East?
The East is definitely, I mean, as Andrew stated, I think the East is going to be what the world's largest cocktail party is going to be very interesting this year. It does fall on Halloween, so it's going to be very interesting, kind of the energy and the feel of that game. I think the keys for Florida during that game were, obviously, they didn't have any turnovers compared to Ole Miss having four. That, to me, speaks a lot of volumes. But I also think part of it was, and I'm not taking credit away from Florida, but Ole Miss probably got so high for facing Alabama. Their energy was so high. I think that's so hard to replicate week after week. And I think they headed to the swamp. They're like, it's just Florida. Florida, you know, ding dong, kind of, you know, the king is dead there in that sense of Urban Meyer's not there. They have a new coach. It's hard to kind of get them up like it would be for like at Nick Saban at Alabama. And I think that may have played a little bit in Ole Miss's win. Obviously not a 28-point swing, but I think it may have played a little bit into the effort maybe we saw from Ole Miss. You thought that they would have woken up, you know, at least halfway through the game, but they didn't. And all the credit in the world goes to Florida. And them kind of – they're in the driver's seat now. They're completely in the driver's seat. And we'll see kind of where they go for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I'll come back to you, Andrew. We're back on the Ole Miss side of the coin, where they ended up losing a tough game again on the road. But they're still – in control of the conference, assuming they can win the rest of their games in the West. Obviously, LSU and Texas A&M are 2-0 right now, but Alabama was probably the biggest challenge, and they're still 1-1 with the advantage going to Ole Miss. And Arkansas, despite their early struggles in the conference, actually are still 1-1 as well. So they've got just as much of a shot as anybody else. Do you have any thoughts on how the West might play out? Is Ole Miss still in contention, or should we be looking at, I don't know. Who said LSU was going to be the dominant team? I don't remember. But anyway, I'll throw it to you.
I think it's another division where you have a lot of parity. You have a lot of teams that obviously with Ole Miss knocking off Alabama with the right plan can come in and win a game just about any weekend. You know, even you saw Arkansas go into Tennessee and win. I think that, yeah, it's going to come down to, you know, LSU and A&M are still undefeated. Neither of them have played the heavy hitters on that side of the conference. Both still have Alabama, both still have Ole Miss, and they have to play each other. But I think those are the two teams you've got to look at right now as being kind of the favorites are A&M and LSU. I think A&M has looked extremely talented. Kyle Allen has played a lot better than we expected, and then they've shown up and been able to play defense very, very well. I think LSU is definitely got a very strong chance to win the West this year.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder about that looking at their quarterback strength, because that's another quarterback that hasn't necessarily been challenged, and that reminds me a lot of a UGA team that got stomped this week at home. But they do have Leonard Fournette. Nigel, what are your thoughts on that division?
As you just mentioned his name, Fournette, I think in a conference that has so many good running backs, two of them facing off this past weekend with Henry and Chubb, Fournette may be the best of all three of them, which is crazy. You know, we obviously saw he was the first, you know, running back in SEC's history to have three 200-yard games in a row. And, I mean, the comparisons won't stop, and they don't need to stop. You know, crazy stuff has been flying around about him. I think as long as LSU has him, I think they are going to be the front runners. If something happens to him, God forbid, I think, you know, that would obviously put them in jeopardy. But he will literally put that team on his back. And until otherwise proven, I think LSU is the team to beat because they're going to do enough on defense. We know that's the Mad Hatter's calling card. You know, obviously, like you said, the quarterback hasn't been challenged. But, you know, and Alabama is obviously going to bring something to the table. We saw what they did to Georgia. You have a good running back. Your quarterback's up par. We're still going to take you out of your element. So we'll see. But I'm going to go with LSU for now.
All right, then. We'll move on to, I believe, ESPN is ranking the Big 10 as the second strongest conference right now. I'm not sure how I feel about that because every week I watch them, it seems to be that Michigan State and Ohio State are struggling with some team that they should just be running up the score on one way or the other. Now, this week, you must have been blind if you weren't watching Indiana try and drive down to beat Ohio State at the end of the game. It just didn't play out that way. Michigan State was a very similar situation against Purdue, but they also ended up winning. I just don't have any other way to put this. I'll start with you, Nigel. Are these the worst, best teams we've seen maybe in the past decade?
No, because that would obviously be Florida State last year. They were the best, worst team that I think we had ever seen. Ohio State has looked awful, absolutely awful in terms of all execution since the Virginia Tech game. This has not stopped. If I had to pick a 1 and 2, Michigan State has at least a more quality win against a more quality opponent in Oregon, because I think Oregon, although they've lost, is still a really good team. But with Michigan, you know, at least we've seen them do something, albeit at home. Ohio State has just not looked good. They keep playing two quarterbacks. They keep playing this mind game of we play both quarterbacks because we want them to both get work. They're not comfortable. If Ezekiel Elliott is not, you know, having a mammoth game for them, we obviously see them lose that game. You know, Indiana had a chance to actually win the game at the end. I mean, the teams that I'm sure we'll talk about them in the next couple of minutes. The teams that we're talking about with, you know, Northwestern and Iowa, those kind of teams are in the mix. And I think, to otherwise proven, those teams are going to be in the mix. And I think the Big Ten is very much up for grabs.
Okay, well, as Nigel pointed out, FSU was a mediocre team last year. But I think pundits continue to give them credit for winning the games that they were put in, even though it was closer than it should have been. Andrew, am I making too much of this? And should we just be giving Ohio State and Michigan State the credit for winning these games in them themselves with the target on their backs?
You always want to give a team somewhat credit for winning games. Now, you start to get into the idea of game control and all these other, how close is it, how close isn't it? You just got to kind of, you know, you play who's on your schedule. You know, no one expected Texas Tech to play as well as they did against TCU.
Sure.
But no one's sitting here talking about, even, you know, with TCU having a close win over a Minnesota team that's kind of wishy-washed since then. You know, no one's pegging TCU or talking about OTCU with these close wins. So I think people are going to create the narratives they want. I think Michigan State's a better team than Ohio State. I think they're a more complete team than Ohio State. I think their schedule sets up a little bit different. They play Wisconsin, where Ohio State doesn't. No, I'm completely wrong. Neither of them play Wisconsin, which Wisconsin looked like hot garbage this weekend anyway. But, yeah, it's just sometimes teams struggle. You know, I mean, it's a grind out there. You're almost rarely going to have a team that just week in and week out just beats the fire out of anyone. There's too much parity in college football.
All right. So looking at the rest of the Big Ten, and Nigel started getting into it. He's getting pumped up. I think what a lot of people are seeing is that the Big Ten is a lot more of an exciting conference than people were giving them credit for, especially with the number of teams that aren't ranked in that conference. We've got undefeated teams in Iowa and Northwestern, and obviously Ohio State and Michigan State. We got a Michigan team that's only got one loss against an undefeated Utah team at Utah. So there's a lot of good teams out there and a lot of interesting matchups, especially over the next few weeks. Northwestern again at Michigan, you know, Michigan State, Northwestern at Iowa. There's a lot of stuff that's to be excited about going forward. So, Andrew, I'll start with you this time. What are you most excited about in this conference, and should we be looking for any big upsets over Michigan State and Ohio State down the line because of how surprisingly close this conference has become?
Michigan State's at Michigan next week. That'll definitely be a big one. They're at home to Indiana the week after, which Indiana's gotten a little bit better than they used to be. So that might be a two-game stretch that'll tax Michigan State a little bit. Ohio State's got Maryland, Penn State, and at Rutgers before they hit a bye week. I don't really see any of those teams challenge them too much. Maryland's not very good. Penn State's, you can't really figure them out, and Rutgers is a complete dumpster fire. So Ohio State's going to struggle with those three. The big three game, the Northwestern set, where they're at Michigan, at home to Iowa, and at Nebraska, is going to be a big set, because we've seen this from Northwestern before. They start a season hot, they get undefeated, and they just can't keep it going for the second part of the season. Yeah. Now, Iowa, I don't know if anyone sat down and watched any of that Iowa-Wisconsin game. That may have been the worst game, one of the worst games I've ever watched. Both of those teams, they played well on defense, but the quarterback at Iowa, C.J. Beathard, was 9 of 21 for 77 yards with a touchdown and interception. I mean, this was your old-school Big Ten, smash-em-up defensive football. And it's the same thing Northwestern's kind of won with the same strategy, so it'll be interesting to see. I think Michigan's a team that sets up to surprise a lot of folks. I think Harbaugh's done a lot better job than we expected him to do in his first year.
Yeah.
All right, Nigel, what excites you about the Big Ten moving forward, and are you expecting any of those big upsets?
I mean, we just have to at this point, right? Because Northwestern is going to be in the mix. Surprisingly, Northwestern doesn't play either Michigan. It doesn't either play Michigan State or Ohio State during the regular season, right? Which is crazy when you think about it, because Northwestern is obviously one of our picks for making it to the Big Ten championship game on its side. I think the last 2 weeks of the regular season for both Ohio State and Michigan State is going to be very interesting, where Michigan State has to play Ohio State, then Penn State. you have Ohio State who has to play Michigan State and then Michigan. And we all know that they don't even mention each other's names in their rivalry, which I found out, and I thought, I was like, that's an intense rivalry. You don't even mention the name of the school that you're playing. And I think, depending on how Michigan looks, who only has a loss now to that undefeated Utah team that people are talking about as a playoff contender, maybe Michigan's a lot better than we give it credit for, albeit their quarterback is not as good as people are saying. I mean, he's thrown 6 interceptions so far in the year, and I think he's only had one game without an interception. I think with Ohio State showing us what they've showed us for the past, you know, let's say four games, you know, I think Ohio State will be right for the picking either against Michigan State, potentially Penn State. I'm going to give Penn State a little bit of credit. We'll see how they go. But I think that the Big Ten is going to end in a boom, and it's going to be awesome for the end of the college football season.
All right. I'm certainly hoping that that conference delivers on some exciting games. I think one way or another, a playoff team will come out of that conference. But at this point, I'm just hoping for the most exciting games we can get. And I'd expect most of them to come out of that conference. Moving down south to the Big 12, that's another conference I think is surprising some people, but to me it's in a different way. There are four teams that are undefeated and ranked coming out of that conference, but you might only know two of them. And we got Baylor, TCU, and Oklahoma, who is always ranked, but just doesn't get talked up as much as the other teams. And Oklahoma State, which most people would be kind of, unless they're looking for them, might not even realize that they were ranked. All of those teams are undefeated. And none of them play each other until the last 5 weeks of the schedule. So I'm going to start with you, Andrew. Is this the strongest conference at the top? And what are the odds that these teams remain undefeated until they end up playing each other?
I think it might be the strongest at the top, but I also think it might be the weakest at the bottom. You know, you do have Baylor and TCU shown again and again. Now, TCU's had some fights. Baylor, on the other hand, has pretty much just run roughshod over that conference. And they're at Kansas this week, and Kansas is down 2 quarterbacks and is about to start a true freshman. So I believe I saw the spread on that game is 45.
It's
going to be rough.
I would still take the spread at this point. That's ridiculous.
You know, Oklahoma has a tough end with at Baylor, home to TCU, and then in Stillwater for the Bedlam series. Oklahoma State's Baylor and Oklahoma to finish. TCU's Oklahoma and Baylor. Now, Baylor plays Texas on the 6th of December to kind of make up for them not having a championship game. I think if Baylor's undefeated going into that Texas game, that actually will help them out. You know, I don't know if you see anyone come out undefeated. West Virginia's a quality team. Texas Tech, you know, they played well against TCU. They kind of didn't show up to play Baylor. You know, Kansas State usually shows that they'll win one they're not supposed to. So I don't know if you'll see all four get close to it, but I think Baylor's probably, from what I've seen, the best team to do that.
Okay, and Nigel, what are your thoughts on that? Obviously,
I think every once in a while a perfect marriage happens, and even though, like you were saying, TCU and Baylor are at the top right now just because of their rank, I think Oklahoma is the more complete team right now, and I'm only saying that because they have the more impressive resume. They went to TCU on the road to an SEC opponent. Now, TCU has turned out to not be as good as Tennessee did turn out not to be as good as people were, you know, kind of touting them to be. But, you know, they obviously have a pretty impressive schedule, more so than obviously TCU. TCU at least has Minnesota. But with, you know, Baylor, I mean, they play a joke of a schedule. And you know, they really haven't gotten into kind of the throes of their schedule. They're ranked number 3 right now in the AP poll. We'll kind of see how much the committee kind of takes that into effect in terms of their ranking. You're completely right, that they don't play anybody till the last you know, third of the season, Andrew, when you were saying Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and then TCU. I think, you know, Baylor's going to coast, and I think they're going to trip up at least against one of these teams. If they don't, then they're going to a playoff. So, you know, we'll see kind of how things go, but I think Baylor's going to trip up. They have amazing wide receivers, by the way, but I just don't see it. I think someone's going to get them an off day.
All right, now a quick question for both of you. We saw last year where we had two teams come out of that conference with one loss that were very strong and probably should have been considered for a playoff spot. But because there was no conference championship, as Andrew brought up earlier, both those teams got snubbed. Now, it's a very distinct possibility that we'll have a similar scenario this year. While it is also, there is also a chance that Baylor will come out undefeated because of the general lack of strength on their schedule. I think it's much more likely that we'll end up getting at least two teams with one loss. Now, if it happens like that, will the lack of a conference championship end up hurting this conference and end up keeping the teams out of the playoffs again?
I don't see the Big 12 being left out this year. If I had to say today the conference to be left out, it's going to be the ACC. But an addendum to that, I think even though the Big 12 will get into the playoffs this year, I think they'll have a conference championship game next year because they'll add a 12th team. Conspiracy theory, they'll add SMU to the Big 12 next year.
If they did that, it'd just be doing it because they needed an extra team. That's basically what you're telling them.
But I also think Chad Morris is going to make that an attractive team to add to one's conference because I think they're going to continue to do really well in the American this year.
You keep telling yourself that, man. All right, Andrew, what are your thoughts on the matter?
I think a one-loss Big 12 team gets in regardless. I think the committee took so much heat last year. I think it's going to be interesting because I do think you will have probably a one-loss Notre Dame team to take a look at as well. So there's going to be a lot of interesting decisions the committee has to make. But I think you're also going to see it because Baylor plays Texas in the last week of the season, that same week as all the championship games. And I think that was scheduled to try to set up, all right, if we have Baylor, who is undefeated or has one loss, let them play and try to keep them in the minds of the voters.
All right. That's fair.
There's no chance SMU joins the Big 12.
You don't think so?
I think it gets them too much back towards being like what the old Southwest Conference one was, and I don't think that helps anybody.
I mean, they need a team. My only thought process by that theory is they need a team to get to 12, and what team out in that area do you add?
Memphis.
Huh?
Memphis.
Or Houston.
Memphis?
Or Houston.
No, because Memphis brings them a better overall athletic program, as well as it brings a larger TV market and gets them into a different state.
Okay. I could see that. And, Logan, that was a good pick with the Houston. But then the thing is with them is I don't think their coach stays there forever. That is obviously a temporary stomping ground for him with the talent that he has and everything going for him. So,
well, we'll see.
They gain nothing by adding another Texas school.
Understood.
We'll see. Anyway, so speaking of we keep talking about the American Conference. So let's just go ahead and talk about them. Two conferences that might actually be better than the ACC at this point, the MAC and the American. So we got the MAC with a 3-2 Bowling Green, who I've just been so thrilled about their quarterback. Oh, man. I need to buy this man some flowers and take him on a nice date. But his name's Matt Johnson. He's got 2,000 passing yards, 14 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 66% completion percentage. And he's still not getting talked about for the Heisman. They got a 4-0 Toledo, who is now ranked. They've got the Ohio Bobcats, 4-1. It's just a very impressive conference. And then we look across the way at the American Conference as another one. They've got Memphis, Navy, Houston, Temple, all of which are undefeated. And Navy will be playing Notre Dame this week. it just looks like a very strong conference overall. So I'm going to simplify this down to one question. Which of these conferences do you think both of these conferences or one of these conferences are better than the ACC and why?
You want to go first, Andrew?
Yeah, if I had to pick one, I'd pick the American, and that's because you've had, you know, teams like Temple have beaten Penn State, East Carolina beat Virginia Tech. You're seeing a lot of that. I think top to bottom, they may not be better, but the American definitely has a lot of strong teams. You know, I think, you know, you've still got three undefeated teams on the Western side that all have to play each other. Temple's undefeated, who's looked really good. Now, Memphis does have to go, I believe, to Ole Miss later in the year. No, actually, Ole Miss has to play at Memphis. So that'll definitely be a chance for the American to kind of pick up a big win. Navy, obviously, with Notre Dame this week would be another one. But, yeah, I mean, I think the American is a very, very good conference. Not necessarily as deep, but definitely has a good bit of talent at the top. And then, you know, you've got a pretty good Cincinnati team at 3-2 who beat Miami.
All right, Nigel?
I mean, I have to agree. I think, you know, obviously with the MAC, you know, you have Toledo who, you know, dealt a loss to Arkansas, so that makes them sit pretty high on the list. And obviously Bowling Green, like you said, with Matt Johnson doing so well. But I'm going to have to go with Andrew on this one, that the American is the only conference that I think just, at least at the top, has some quality wins, is going to keep winning. How many of them are going to, of the top four teams, how many of them are going to still have their coaches next year, depending on who gets fired at better schools, will remain to be seen. And I'm mostly looking at Houston and Memphis in that regard. You know, so maybe the American falls back to normal a little bit next year, but obviously with Navy is going to keep their coach for the foreseeable future. Temple has a great defense. You know, you didn't put on this list, Cincinnati's in the American. Cincinnati just beat Miami. You know, I think the American could position itself to be a thorn in a lot of teams' side when the bowl season kind of swings around here.
Yeah, I think the American's really going out to show that they, despite the failings of the conference before them, the Big East, the American really is a very strong athletic conference overall, not only in football, but in basketball in some areas. I think they deserve more consideration than they're given, certainly. All right, our last topic for the day, we've got coaches that are on the hot seat. Now, I know y'all disagree with this, but I'm bringing it up because it's a discussion that I've had with plenty of people that I've talked to recently. Georgia had its first loss of the year, which of course leads to the overreaction period for the Georgia fan base, where everybody wants to see Mark Richt get fired. So does that really put him on the hot seat? And I mean, what are his chances of getting fired? As far as the actual list, I'm looking at more along the lines of Al Golden and some other players. You can make the argument that Paul Johnson might be on the hot seat, but I severely doubt it. Obviously, Texas has got some questions, but they've had questions since week one this year. I guess, Andrew, start with the topic about Mark Richt and then just take it wherever you want.
A couple of things about Richt. I think the two biggest things that have hurt Mark Richt at Georgia, things that really aren't his fault, and that was Urban Meyer winning two national titles at Florida and Gene Sizek winning a national title at Auburn. Because when those coaches were able to come in short periods of time and do that at those programs, it kind of forced Georgia and their fan base to step back and say, we've got the amount of money, we've got the talent, we've got the infrastructure, we've got the fan base. Why haven't we been able to do it? What is our biggest stumbling block in these issues? And the other interesting side of it, and I've heard this on, you know, I hate to admit that I actually do listen to sports radio every now and again, but they've talked about the other thing that Georgia fans are afraid of is the Philip Fulmer effect. They saw what Fulmer did at Tennessee. They saw that Tennessee fired him, and they saw how bad Tennessee has been since. and a lot of Georgia fans are willing to take 11, 10 win seasons, good but not good enough, and not fall down into the depths that Tennessee has. The other side of it you start to run into is, even though Georgia is this huge program with unlimited funds, great infrastructure, fantastic recruiting ground, everything you need to be successful, you fire a coach who wins 10 games a year, yeah, you're going to have guys that line up to take the job, but I think you're going to scare a lot of really good guys off too.
All right, well, Nigel, to the rest of that question, are there any coaches that you think should be on the hot seat right now after their performances?
I mean, I wouldn't so much as say they're on the hot seat as they're already out the door. And obviously, you know, the first guy that comes to mind is Mike London. I think Virginia wasn't obviously helped by their schedule. I think if they had a maybe NC State schedule, we'd be talking about something completely different. But, you know, UVA is obviously going to go in a different direction after this. I think Arkansas was something that was brought to mind. Brett Bielema is unapologetically himself, and I don't know if he'll get fired, but will he rein it in? No, he definitely won't. That's who he is. He is never going to apologize for it, you know, and that's not something that he's going to really have to worry about. And I know the guy that everybody's thinking of is Charlie Strong. I mean, they came out today and said that they are in support of Charlie Strong, that he has nothing to worry about. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know if that's true or not. We have heard that before and seen people fired the next day. And we have heard that before and known that, yeah, they were, you know, he'll have a turnaround next year that will make him the envy of every Big 12 coach in terms of he took that project on and, you know, did really well with it. And like Andrew said, you know, Texas is in shambles right now. Do you fire this guy and try to bring in a new guy, and this guy doesn't know what his window for success is going to be and how long it's going to take to kind of reclaim this Texas project? You fire this guy and lose any headway that he has, then you're going to, you know, scare away a lot of good guys. You know, I almost look at Texas situation as similar to the Miami situation with Randy Shannon. With Randy Shannon, he wanted to get the thug out of Miami, and he did, but at the cost of some wins, and people weren't appreciative of it. Charlie Strong is trying to get the thug out of Texas, and that means he's being strict. That means he's making them responsible for themselves. That means they have to be responsible in terms of their action. You know, you can't be arrested. You have to have good grades. And I think people are willing to sacrifice that kind of public relations and just get the wins, and he's not about that. So I give him as much credit as possible. I hope he stays another year and isn't on the hot seat.
Oh, and Andrew, one more quick question for you. It came to my mind at the last second, well, with the rivers that are going on down here in South Carolina. So I know PJ Fleck has been off to a slow start, rowing the boat up there in Western Michigan. Is he on the hot seat, or do you think they're still going to give him a little time to help that program develop?
I think Fleck's fine. He's done a complete culture change up there. He's built in a lot of traditions to a program that didn't really have a lot of them. I don't see them letting go of him unless the bottom absolutely falls off. And they've got enough talent, especially with Jarvion Franklin. They should be able to run the ball on anybody in the MAC.
All right. Well, that'll sum up our podcast for the day. I want to thank both of y'all for coming with us, Andrew and Nigel. And I want to thank all our listeners out there for listening. Again, if you have any questions or comments that you'd like us to answer, shoot us an email at toemeatleather@gmail.com. Again, that is toemeatleather, M-E-E-T, @gmail.com. Yes, I changed the email. No, it doesn't have an S on it. Sorry. That's not my problem. Anyway, y'all have a good rest of your week. Until then.